Welcome to Exploration 1, Module 6.
Alright, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to cover the subnetting and the binary to decimal, decimal to binary conversion processes again. For you people who have been in Discovery with me before, or those of you who have been in Exploration with me before, this will be good practice. For anyone else, this should be somewhat of a journey. So we're going to cover initially how to convert the quantities into binary, because that's important for the subnetting, and I will show you when you need to actually do these binary conversions, so that you can be aware of when all this messing around is necessary. First of all, can anybody tell me, you can type it into chat if you want, how many bits are in an IP address? Anybody know? Yeah, I'd go 32 bits in an IP address. And if you've ever seen an IP address, they are often written in what we call dotted decimal notation. So, for example, where's my chat? Here we go. Okay. Okay. And that's there's another example that somebody's fed in there. That's good. So obviously, you're looking at four numbers separated by full stops. Now, what you will find is that that is actually one big, as far as the computer is concerned, that is one 32-bit binary number, which I'll talk about in a moment. Can anybody tell me what of significance, well, relative significance, has happened in the last month as far as IANA is concerned? Does anybody know?
They've actually allocated the last lock of IPv4 addresses. So in theory, we will run out at some point in the next who knows how many years, but at some point in the future.
Ah, and it's probably time to disable. You probably have to jump in and disable sticky keys, because I think holding down the shift does that on occasion. Yes. They have allocated their last block of IPv4 addresses, which is to say that they are going to be able to reallocate addresses, and they are going to be able to mess around, and they're going to reduce the allocations to some people, and they'll have a program for voluntarily handing back IP addresses, and they'll pay you money to hand back the IP addresses you're not using, and they'll stick everybody behind network address translators, and they will generally mess around until the migration to IPv6. Apart from Brian, has anybody had any experience with IPv6? Okay, well, luckily for you, we don't have any experience in this course. We cover IPv4, but suffice it to say that IPv6 addresses are 128 bits long, so they are 16 hexadecimal digits, which I'll talk about hexadecimal in a bit, grouped into groups of four, separated by colons. So 2001 colon 3DF5 colon 4C4C colon 1234 is the sort of stuff that you would be looking at if you were looking at an IPv6 address. Usually they are handed out in blocks of slash 64 or slash 96. Now, to give you some idea of what that means, if you are handed out a block of slash 96, and I will cover this terminology in a minute, you have 2 to the power of 32 usable IPv6 addresses, and that means you have about 4 billion addresses to use for yourself and your devices. Even if they hand out a slash 96 block, that is actually quite a big block of address space. Alrighty. Now, have I been through classful addressing yet? I seem to have memories of going through it last week.
You went through 2 weeks.
Just keep your finger down a little bit longer, sweetie. Sorry. 2 weeks ago. Anybody want me to go through classful addressing again, or are we happy with class A, B, C and stuff? All right, let's have a quick pop quiz just to make sure. So a Class B address has what subnet mask, anyone? Yep, all right. And approximately, I don't need the exact number, so approximately how many thousand IP addresses can we have on a Class B subnet? No, it's actually 65,000. Just let me see what's going on with the delay. I'll see what our ping times are showing here. We're only trying, it must be something on your end, guys. I'm showing a ping time of 67. What are you seeing, Grace?
180.
Okay, yeah, that's about right for what we're running on our network. I'm showing 93 here. It's not too bad. That's okay. All right. Now, okay, let's move on. So, yeah, okay. All right. So, does anybody know how we would work out how many IP addresses we can have on a Class B network? Does anybody remember how to work that out? So, subnet mask of 255.255.0.0. Does anybody remember how we'd work out how many IP addresses would be on that subnet?
Well, from memory, we have 16 bits for hosts and 16 bits for network, and I'm doing that. Maybe that'll stop before I fix it. Hang on, I'm going to fix that before I continue because it keeps repeating.
No worries. We have 16 bits for network. We have 16 bits for host because the subnet mask is a 32-bit quantity. And the portion of that on the left-hand side, which is used for the host for the network portion of the IP address, is 255.255, and we'll talk about the conversion steps in a moment. And the right-hand side is 0.0, which means we have 16 bits for the network and 16 bits for the host. If we want to calculate how many hosts we can have, we basically run the calculation 2 to the power of 16 minus 2, and that will give us 65,534, or approximately 64,000, 65,000 addresses on a Class B subnet. Anyone got any questions on that bit before I get onto the conversion process? Alrighty, now, as I spoke about 2 weeks ago, there are actually a couple of number systems that we use in computing. Our regular number system is base 10, and as I said last time, then if we had the number 123, we could write that as 3 times 10 to the power of 0 plus 2 times 10 to the power of 1 plus 1 times 10 to the power of 2, and that would give us 123. Everybody remember that stuff. Alrighty, now the other thing we spoke about briefly, and I'm going to go into more detail now, is when computers process numbers, they use what we call a base 2 number system. So rather than having 10 to the power of 1, 10 to the power of 2, 10 to the power of 3, which is 10, 100, and 1000 respectively, we have 2 to the power of 0, which is 1, 2 to the power of 1, which is 2, 2 to the power of 2, which is 4, and so on. So what I want people to do is open a notepad document and write yourself out a table of powers of 2, with 2 to the power of 0 being 1, and 2 to the power of 7 being 128. To get each of those powers of 2, you simply double your last result. So 2 to the power of 0 is 1, 1 and 1 is 2, is your 2 to the power of 1, 2 and 2 is 4, is 2 to the power of 2, 4 and 4 is 8, which is 2 to the power of 3, all the way up to 128, which is 2 to the power of 7. So I'll just sit around and wait for you guys to have that little table up in Notepad, because you will use it later, unless you are good with your powers of two and you know all of the ones up to 128, which would be marvellous. Hmm? I don't have to be. Hang on. Okay. I just want to run an Eagle server on them, that's all. No, it's not. Okay, has everybody got their powers of two table done yet? So, 2 to the power of 0 is 1, 2 to the power of 1 is 2. 2 to the power of 2 is 4, 2 to the power of 3 is 8, 2 to the power of 4 is 16, 2 to the power of 5 is 32, 2 to the power of 6 is 64, 2 to the power of 7 is 128, in case you're doing this from the recording. Excellent. And if you're battling with your shift keys, Brian will assume that you know your powers of 2. Hopefully your sticky keys have stopped being sticky. Alright. So, computers have on-off switches, and they can basically represent all their numbers by combinations of ones and zeros. So, for example, with the powers of two table that you have, it should be possible to figure out what the binary equivalent for any number between 0 and 255 is using your table, by figuring out which powers of 2 you are going to set to actually get to that particular number. Now, I'm going to go through the actual conversion process the way I do it. There are multiple ways of doing this stuff. If you have another way that you would like to tell us all about, and this goes for anybody, you can email instructors or tell us on lecture. But basically, we can represent any number between 0 and 255 as combinations of powers of 2. Now, the easiest way I have found of converting these things, especially if you're writing things out on a computer and stuff, is, let's just say we're doing the number 255 because it's really easy to do, and it sort of illustrates my point. Basically, you find the number, the largest power of 2 that you can subtract from 255. Okay, so let's assume that we are 255 minus the largest power of 2. Can anybody tell me the largest power of 2 in our table that we can subtract from 255? We're just doing decimal to binary conversion, Conrad. We're finding the largest power of 2 that we can subtract from 255. Alright, so the answer is 128. Okay, good stuff. So, somewhere, I don't care where, if you happen to have a blinky note taker or another computer or something else to write down on, it makes life easier. If you don't, then you'll have to be a bit of an alt-tab jockey. We want to put a 1 down, because we can see that 128 will be one of the combinations that we're going to have from 255. Alright, 255 minus 128, you are allowed in... Yeah, well, that is the conversion, but I'm going to work through it. Basically, we're going to go 255 minus 128, which will leave us with 127. Yes, in this particular instance, you are allowed to use the calculator for additions and subtractions only. So, we have 127 left. Would everybody agree that the biggest power of 2 we can subtract from 127 is 64? Everyone happy with that? Yep. Okay. So, we put a 1 down. We subtract 64 from 127, and we end up with 63. Okay, cool. The largest power of 2 we can subtract from 63 is 32. We're still with us here? Yep. So we're going to put another 1 down. And then we are going to say that we've got 31 left. We can subtract 16 from 31. We put another 1 down. Yep, that's correct. We now put the 15 we've got left, and we take 8 off the 15, and we put another 1. That leaves us with 7. We then take 4 off the 7, which leaves us with another 1. And then we take 2 off the the 3, which leaves us with another 1, and then we take 1 off the 1, which leaves us with nothing, which leaves us with an answer of 1111. Anybody want to have a wild guess what 128 plus 64 plus 32 plus 16 plus 8 plus 4 plus 2 plus 1 would all add up to? Wild guess. Well done. Now, you're all going to say to me, hey, that's a bit difficult. How am I going to do that? Well, the bad news is practice. And sometimes Skype calls to your instructor if you get really stuck. Let's do something that doesn't subtract as nicely. Now, I'm going to need somebody to write the digits for me as I go because I'm talking and I'm not that good of a multitasker. So if one of you could have a notepad document, put the ones and stuff down as I do them, that would be really wonderful. All right. Let's convert 100... Okay. All right. Thank you. That would be much appreciated. If you weren't so mind-bogglingly busy working for the university, we would drag you in as an instructor. We appreciate your assistance immensely. Let's do 144. Okay? So, anybody tell me the largest power of 2 that can be subtracted from 144?
128.
That is correct. 128. Now, there's a trick here, all right? So we put a 1 down. Okay, so that is about 128. Now, we can't subtract 64 from what we've got left, can we? And we can't subtract 32 from what we've got left because we'd end up with a negative number because we've only got 16 left. Is everyone cool with that? Because 144 minus 128 is 16. So we can't subtract 32. We can't subtract 64. So we put 100 because we can't subtract those powers of 2. We can then subtract a 16. So we put a 1. So we've got 1001. And now we've got nothing left, so we need to put zeros for the powers of 2 that are left. So it's 1001. 0000. Now, did I go too fast? And what do I need to keep re-explaining? Because it's really important that you guys understand this very well. And I would completely understand if I'd gone too fast. Alright, now, can anybody explain to me, and I want one of you to explain to me, you don't actually have to do it, but can anybody explain to me how we would check our answer?
You take the 144, you look at, you can get 128 into it, and you look at your remainder and then see whether you can, if 64 will go into it, and then 32, and then 16, and so on.
Okay, that's how we do the conversion, but to actually check our answers, what you would actually do is you would look at the byte from right to left, and you would add the powers of 2 together. So, for example, you would look, and you'd have 0, 0, 0, 0, so that's 0, 1, 2, 3, okay? So I've got 1 lot of 2 to the power of 4, which is 16, plus 1 lot of 2 to the power of 7, which is 128. So 128 and 16 is 144.
Will you do that one again?
I certainly can. When you are checking the conversion of your binary, you basically look at the byte either from right to left or left to right, but make sure you get the powers right. And for each bit that is set to a 1, you actually add the powers of 2 together. So if we look at our byte, and our byte is 1000100, I think, wasn't it? Yeah, that sounds right to me. So we look at the left hand side of the byte, and we see 1, and we see 128, and then we don't see a 64, we don't see a 32, we see a 16, so we say 128 plus 16 is 144. We don't see an 8, we don't see a 4, we don't see a 2, we don't see a 1. So the fact that 1000100, if we add 16 and 128 together, we end up with 144. So the combinations of the power of 2s that we have picked out must add up to give us our decimal number. Otherwise, we got it wrong.
Thank you. That makes it clear.
Well, put it this way. If you get this down correctly, I was just about to say down pat and was groaning at my horrible pun, you will be well through absolutely whooping Chapter 5 of Discovery. Okay. Okay, Grace, do you want to get on a bus soonish then?
Yeah, I will.
Don't forget the multimeter and Ian's little beeper, which is on your desk.
Ian's little beeper. He needs it back?
I think he wants it back.
Yep, cool.
Yeah, he wants it back.
No, that's fine. Okay, yep, it's coming back.
Yeah, we've got the modifications we've recommended, which I've said are an earphone jack and so it doesn't beep when it's not scanning anything and a few things like that. Okay, anyway, we'll talk about that when you come in. That's fine, but yeah, bring it back in with you. Okay. Alright, let's do another number, because I just want to run through this again. I know this will be really tedious for everybody, but let's just do it, because you guys are going to have worksheets and exercises that are up in the extras, unless you're not doing exploration. If, however, you would like to do the exercises and send them to me, and there are a certain number of students who have actually felt that way, I will mark them. So if you want to go up and grab the exercises out of exploration and do them, I will mark them even if you're not in the class. And that goes for anybody who's even listening to this recording after the fact. I will mark your exercises for you. However, if you don't, it's not the end of the world if you're not in the class. They are actually in the labs folder, and there's some binary exercises that I should see a completion from every student. If you've done them before, you don't have to do them again, but I'd really like it if you did, because it will prove to me that you actually know what you're doing with decimal to binary conversion. Let's say we are converting the number 13 into binary. Now, can anybody tell me, if we have zeros on the left-hand side of a binary number, so say for example we have 00000000000001111, do they make any difference if they're on the left-hand side? No. It's okay, you had a 50-50 chance of getting that one right. It's like if I said I have 000000007 cents. Or I have 0007 cents. Zeros on the left-hand side don't make any difference. They are just redundant. The zeros on the right-hand side, however, say, for example, $100 and $1 million and $1 billion, well, they make a big difference to me, and they probably make a big difference to most people. Now, let's say we are converting 13 into decimal. What is the largest power? What is the largest power of 2 we can subtract from 13?
8.
Yeah, we have 8. So put down a 1, everybody. Now, what is the? Can we subtract a 4 from what we've got left? I think we can, but yeah. Okay. So we put 1, 1. Now, we've got 1 left. Can we subtract a 2 from the 1 we've got left? I'd be thinking not, but no, good, right. So I've got 1, 1, 0, and then can we subtract 1 from 1? Yes, we can. 1, 1, 0, 1. So 13 is 1, 1, 0, 1. Does anybody have any questions about that procedure? Now, obviously, to check it, we add our powers of 2 back together again. We look at the right-hand side of the bit and we say 1 plus 4 is 5 plus 8 is 13. We got it right. 1101. Alright, does one of you want to, other than Dana, who can probably do these in his sleep, does somebody want to volunteer, and believe me, if you get it wrong, I'm not going to be upset. Does somebody want to convert 47 into binary, or talk me through how we would do that? I can even do the subtractions for you and stuff if that would make things go faster.
What was the number, Kerry?
47. Alright, you want to have a go at it, Brian? Converting 47 into binary.
Okay, well, the largest power of 2 we can take away from it is 32. Which, so we'll put a 1, and that leaves us with 15. We can't take 16, so we got a 0. We can take 8, so we'll put another 1. So we've got 1, 0, 1. Now I lost track of my numbers. Oh, yes, we can take 8 from 15, which leaves us with 7. We can take a 4, so that'll leave us with another 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
That will leave us with 3, so we can take a 2 away from it, 10111, and we can take 1 away from the 1 that's left to leave us with 0, so I think we get 101111.
That looks pretty good to me. Okay, so to check that, we've got 32... And, actually there's a shortcut you can take here, but you probably didn't, I mean, I saw this because I've been doing it for years. If we're converting 47, we know that 32 and 15 is going to make, 47. So what we can actually do is we can say, alright, so 15 is 1111, because I just happen to know that 15 is all ones, and 32 is a 1, so we go 101111, but we were working through the complete process, which is why we didn't actually take that shortcut. It also can be seen that 47 is 1 less than 48, which is a 16 and a 32, so that's another sort of shortcutty thing you could. As you get good at these, you learn to start taking shortcuts and seeing where the patterns exist. The patterns are not going to jump out in front of you when you first get started on this. I did my first binary conversion in 1989, so a lot of it is experience and knowing what to look for. Now, does anybody have any questions about that process, or is anybody in any way confused about that process? Because this week I'm sending you all off to do the worksheets on this, well, those of you who are in the class and those of you who want to do them, so that you can actually practice this before it all metaphorically dribbles out of your ears. Because the best way to learn a new skill is to practice it. So everybody is happy with that conversion process, or as happy as they're going to be until they actually put it into practice for themselves. Alrighty. Now the other wrinkle I'm going to put into the mix, just so that I've mentioned it, and I don't think we actually need to do these conversions in exploration, but there is another base system called hexadecimal, and it actually uses a base 16. So what we actually have is we have 0 to 9, which are our digits from 1 to, well, 0 to 9, obviously. 10 is A, B is 11, C is 12, D is 13, E is 14, and F is 15. And basically what you do is you break, if you're converting from binary to hexadecimal, you break the bytes in half and you get what we call a nibble. Yes, programmers have a bad sense of humour. And you can basically convert each of those 4-bit quantities into a value between 0 and 15. And you then convert that between 0 and F, and that will convert your binary number into hexadecimal. I don't think we have any exercises that cover that. But as an interesting case in point, if you're ever looking at the hex dump of files, which I used to do, you will often see 0D, 0A, 0D, 0A in files, and that actually stands for carriage return line feed, which will show you how to put a new line into a DOS-based text file. Not something that somebody's going to ask you in the street, but there you have it. Okay, any questions on any of that before I talk a little bit about how the subnetting infrastructure works, and then next week I will revise the subnetting infrastructure after you guys have done your exercises, which are up on qcat.org. Okie dokie. Now, the other in-joke that we also have in the computing industry is that there are 10 types of people in the world: those that know binary and those that don't. And we'll just let that sink in for a moment. I should actually say 10. All right. Now, when we are looking at IP addresses, it is worthwhile mentioning that the internet is a network of connected networks. That is to say, there are small networks that are connected to bigger networks, which are connected to bigger networks. So the big networks, for example, you've got your backbone providers such as Sprint and Sprint and a few others. And then they provide bandwidth to the ISPs, and then the ISPs provide bandwidth to their customers. Okay, so we have a trickle-down effect. If we actually look at the size of subnets, as I've said, Class A subnets have 16 million hosts, Class Bs have 64,000 hosts, Class Cs have approximately 254 hosts. We'll cover that in a second. It's worth mentioning that the quantity that decides how big your network is the subnet mask. Now, the subnet mask is a binary quantity, which is often converted into dotted decimal, that has a number of ones on the left-hand side and a number of zeros on the right-hand side. And the aim of the subnet mask is to tell you how many bits are part of the network portion of the address and how many bits are part of the host portion of the address. So say, for example, you have a subnet mask of 255.255.255.0 or 24 ones and 8 zeros. We have 24 bits are part of the network address and 8 bits are part of the host address. So you will often see an IP address written out as, for example, go in here. See how it's got 192.168.1.4/24. Now the /24 tells you how many bits are in the network portion, and we can then deduce that 32 minus 24 is how many bits are left in the host portion. That is what we call CIDR notation, which stands for classless inter-domain routing. And the reason we do it is because it's possible. So you can also write it as 192.168.1.4 netmask 255.255.255.0. Obviously, 192.168.1.4/24 is quicker to write, and it's potentially shorthand. Now, the reason we do all this mask stuff is because when you're looking at IP addresses and how to route packets and how to actually shuffle things around, to actually test whether these bit boundaries are in place or not, it's very quick to do logical operations in hardware. So we can do ANDs and ORs, and I'll cover those at some point. And the router does those very quickly, and it does the packet matching at very high speed so that you don't introduce too much latency into your network. Now, there's no reason that says that the number of bits in the host portion and the number of bits in the network portion need to be on an 8 boundary. But I want to cover something else first before I get to that. when you look at an IP address of 192.168.1.4 or whatever, there are two special addresses on every IP subnet. If all of the host bits are set to zero, so for example 192.168.1.0, this refers to the whole network. Alright, so that actually refers to the whole 192.168.1 network. Now, if we want to talk to every machine on the 192.168.1 network, perhaps we're doing a time broadcast or similar, we need to set all of the host bits to 1. And to do that, we end up with an address which is 192.168.1.255, because there are 8 host bits and we're going to set them all to 1, which is 1111111 in binary, as we went through earlier, and that is going to be known as the broadcast address. Alright, I'm going to say it again because it's really important. A network with all the host bits set to 0 is the network address. A network address with all the host bits set to 1 is the broadcast. All 0, the network. All 1, the broadcast. All 0, the network. All 1, the broadcast in the host portion of the IP address. This is really important. Don't make me wrap it. Okay? This is going to come up a lot when you actually start working on the subnetting and whether something is part of a network or something is not part of another network. Now, anybody got any questions on any of that yet? Alrighty, now, so, one of the other things I want to point out though is that a subnet mask does not necessarily have to fall on a byte boundary. So say for example, we had a subnet mask of, where's my edity thing, 255.255.255.192. Can everybody see in that subnet mask, or can everybody perceive in that subnet mask, that we have 24 ones, we then have 192, which happens to be made up of 128 and 64. So what we actually have is we have 26 bits of network, so that would be actually written as /26. And we would have 6 bits of host. Because we've got 26 bits for network, 32 minus 26 is 6. Anyone got any questions on that? You know, I'm going to stop asking whether anybody's got any questions. If you've got a question, you can type your name into chat. That will greatly expedite the process. And then if I ignore you, you can type your name into chat lots and lots of times, which I will endeavour not to do. So basically what we have done with that... Yes?
Why would you not set it on the 8-bit brown?
The reason you wouldn't set it on the 8-bit boundary is sometimes it's required to... sometimes it's required to break networks into smaller sizes than a 254-host subnet. So say, for example, I was sharing a house with some people, and for whatever reason I didn't particularly trust these people, because every time they connected their machines to my network I got viruses off them because they didn't, you know, practice safe surfing. So what I might want to do is I may want to split my network in half. So what I would have is I would have a subnet mask of 255.255.255. So basically what I have now is I have 7 bits for the host portion, and I have 27 bits, sorry, 25 bits for the network, which is slash 25. So the way that actually works is that I now have split my network in half. The hosts from 0 to 127 are part of one subnet, because I'm splitting a 256 address subnet in half, and the hosts from 128 to 255 are the other half of the subnet. So what I could actually do is have half of the people in the house that have the viruses on their computers on one subnet, and I would have half the people in the house that don't have their viruses on the other half of the subnet, and then I would use a router to connect those two subnets together with necessary filtering and firewalling, and I would be able to keep the people with viruses off my subnet, thereby keeping my computers safe.
Got it, thanks.
Now, one of the things you've got to keep in mind, and this is another thing that I don't want to have to wrap, so I'm just going to say it a few times. If you have multiple subnets, you need a router with an IP address on each subnet to be able to route between them. So in our example, we have to have an IP address on the 192.168.1.0/27 network, that's the 0/25 network, sorry, which goes from 0 to 127, and you will need an IP address on the other network, which is 192.168.1.128/25, which is between 128 and 255. Now, remember what I said about hosts with all of their host bits set to 0 and all of their host bits set to 1. So if we have seven host bits, 192.168.1.0 is a network address, 192.168.1.127 is a broadcast, 128 is the second network address, 255 is the second broadcast. Always remember that the number of hosts on an IP address on a subnet is 2 to the power of n minus 2, which is the number of where n is, or actually 2 to the power of h minus 2, where h is the number of host bits. Okay, Ventrilo won't speak the caret in there, but I have actually put in a power sign to actually show that calculation. This is actually written in those exercises. I'm pretty sure I've actually written out conversion examples, so this is actually written down on paper. I'm not expecting you guys to take all of it into the grey matter this morning, but it is actually written out, and it is also written in your notes, and hopefully it is written up in a nice enough way for people to be able to understand it. Alright, that's probably enough subnetting today. I think we'll come back to it next week, because I think it's going to be easier to do little bits of it each week rather than doing hours and hours on it. Does anybody have any questions before I move on? Now, there are things called subnet calculators, and you can use subnet calculators. Nobody is going to know if you use a subnet calculator in your work. In fact, Shorewall has a subnet calculator built into it. You can actually go Shorewall IPCalc if you run Shorewall. I do. Probably nobody else does. The other thing I came across the other day, which was quite nifty, and I haven't played with it, I think it's a thing called SmoothSec, and it's basically a copy of Ubuntu Linux with all this security stuff fed into it, and you basically control it with a web browser, which is very nifty. So you can make a secure firewall with two network cards in a PC very quickly, and you can do it all through a web interface, which some people like. My wife being one of them. Basically, that is your subnet stuff. And we will now go on to... Yep, no, we will certainly work on that. And I can certainly forward you the message that Pranav sent me on this particular bit of software. Very nifty setup. But yeah, there are... Yeah, I might actually play with it and put it up as a Thursday chat. I don't think we've got anything planned for this week yet. So maybe, Maybe. Did anybody notice that the backing up your data Thursday chat went up? Did everybody get that announcement? I'm not saying anybody has to download it. Yeah, good. Good, okay. So if anybody wants that one, it's up on the website. And yes, we are soon going to mess with podcasts once we cut across to the new server and I get Dirtcaster behaving itself. Now, that is part of our stuff. Now, everybody, has anyone not been into the network properties of Windows, whatever, and has anybody not seen the IP address and subnet mask stuff that is in there? Has anyone not seen this? Because I can go through this on the recording if I need to.
I've seen it a million times, but in the Windows 7 version, there's IPv4, there's IPv6, and when I do an IPconfig, there's all these weird tunnel adapters that don't seem to do anything. Maybe I should leave that alone, but it's very wonderful.
The tunnel adapters can actually do something. They're actually what we call El Torito tunneling, and basically... I'll have a look at that. Basically, for when you're actually looking at the El Torito tunneling, that allows you to tunnel IPv6 over IPv4. And if you actually set them up correctly, and I haven't actually looked up on how to do it, but it is actually possible, you can actually create yourself an IPv6 tunnel over the IPv4 infrastructure. Normally, I use Freenet. I think they're now called something different. Just out of morbid curiosity, who does your IPv6 connectivity, Brian? I think you've got some. Maybe. Or am I just making it up?
No, I do DreamHost, but they've actually implemented it. My ISP sort of supports it, but it's I've actually been playing with it since I read the Windows Secrets article. And it sort of works, but depending on what site you go to, it either works or it doesn't. It seems very hit and miss.
Okay. So Freenet 6 is probably the easiest way for people to get IPv6 connectivity. And if you register them, they will delegate you a /64. And if you're running Linux, you probably want to use... RADV, I think, was the thing I was using to do the router advertisements. And if you're actually wanting to play with this, Freenet 6 seems to be the way to do it. And they have, you can actually, your 64 remains with you once you register. They don't deallocate you. If you don't register, you can still get an IPv6 address off them. But it will be a one IPv6 address that will be allocated to your workstation, and this will give you connectivity through Freenet. Now, let's go in here and switch JAWS across. Okay, can everybody hear JAWS now? Like that. Oh, I know why. Because I'm an idiot. Just give me a second.
Stylus control. Tab calculator. Alt tab. Chat. Chat dialogue. Meet on yes. See shift tab. Time stamp check. Shift tab. Enable TTS check. Shift tab. I button. Shift tab. Close button. Shift tab. Send button. Shift tab. Edit. New. Nice. Here. Me enter. Tab. Send button. Shift tab. Edit. Alt one. Alt tab. Control. Control dialogue. User. Tab. Button. Tab. Close button. Shift tab. Shift tab. Set up button. Use smart button. Sign in.
Did my microphone just break when I tried to flick that across there?
Well, we didn't hear you for quite a while.
Ah, okay, so my microphone broke. That's not so cool. Time to kill audio repeaters. Oh, and it helps when you're killing audio repeaters not to kill the one that is passing your JAWS through. Okay. Carry fail. And thank you, Braille. I now have my stuff back. Let's see if we've got any more audio repeaters. Okie dokie. Now we get to do some messing around because I want to show you guys the remote bundle. And I'm hoping that it won't all blow up. So let's see if we can make this happen. Better late than... Oh, he's not down here yet. Better late than never, I suppose.
ADSL just got connected. Hooray!
Ventrilo works over dial-up, though.
I didn't have dial-up, and I don't have a dial-up modem, and, dial-up is kind of, last millennium, isn't it?
Well, sadly, there are still lots of people in India that are using it, and, works pretty well for a lot of people. Now, okay. I want one from that. Okie dokie, and then I need one from speakers. Alrighty, so I've got one to two, I've got one to the speakers. I'm going to pull input from two, and I need to inject jaws into one and the microphone into two. Alright. Let's see if we're good to go. Okay, am I still audible? 1, 2, 7, 5, 3. Oh, good.
Yeah, but we don't hear your jaws.
No, haven't switched it across yet. Okay, can we hear jaws? Oh, goody. Why this guy hasn't automated this, I will never know. There should be a way of just running a batch file to make all this happen. I should not need to fire up three repeaters by hand and stuff. Whinge. Complain. All right. Now, one of the things that you guys will be playing with as the labs progress is the virtual bundle. This is the fun stuff. Now, if you haven't gotten TerraTerm down, you want to get it in the next week or two, you want to download TerraTerm, and you want to set up the JAWS script. There are instructions under the General Instructions folder, under the Networking section. Now, you install TerraTerm, you install the JAWS script, and you change the recommended settings in TerraTerm, so you change the cursor to a horizontal line, and a couple of other settings that you might want to play with, and you will get the ability to connect to the remote bundle. To connect to the remote bundle, you telnet, not SSH, telnet to www.qcat.org. Okay? It's a telnet connection to www.qcat.org. If you are game, you can use Windows telnet, you can use PuTTY. Depends which one you want. Or PuTTY. I'm going to connect to a different IP address in here because I'm inside the network. Now, what the remote bundle has is it has three pods. Each pod contains a router, a switch, and two workstations. Router, switch, and two workstations. I was supposed to go through the... No, I'll do that another time, actually. We'll just do this remote bundle stuff now, because I've got it working. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to launch my TerraTerm. Actually, I wonder if I should back JAWS down a bit. Okay, how about we go with that? That might be a little bit easier for people to follow along with.
Tab, voice punctuate, tab, voice salary change percent, tab, voice uppercase, tab, say all speech in tab, okay button, tab, save with dot dot dot, tab, apply button, alt plus A, space. Shift tab, save with dot dot dot, alt shift tab, okay button, space. Desktop, folder view is new, TerraTerm, 47 of 50.
There we go. This is a little bit slower. For those of you who either haven't had as much coffee as I have this morning, actually I had tea, and those of you who aren't good with eloquence at 65%. I would also like to mention at this point that Hadley School for the Blind provides a free course in understanding your screen reader and other speech sources at the same time. And you can learn to use your screen reader at faster speeds while still being able to understand it and other things at the same time. Grace is currently undertaking this course. Just thought I'd mention that. We have no affiliation with them, except for the fact that they're cool. Or at least we think they are. Now, so I'm going to connect into the remote bundle.
Enter. Teraterm match left bracket disconnected right bracket CC. Teraterm colon new connection dialog. Host colon edit combo. W 156.
So I want to cut into 192.168.
10 period. 0. 1. 100 period.
Now you guys are going to www.qcat.org with Telnet. Now obviously there is a limit of 4 connections to the bundle, so we don't want you all telnetting in right at the moment.
144. Tab. History check. Box check. Tab. SSH radio button check.
Now it defaults to SSH. Change it.
Other radio button check. SSH telnet radio button check. 103.
Up 1 to Telnet. Okay, here we go.
Enter. Teraterm match left bracket disconnected right bracket CC. File edit setup control window resize help.
The actual screen says password.
Enter password colon.
Except because it's the first line that comes up, JAWS doesn't read it.
Nicole has just signed in from web messenger.
I'm going to go into pod 1. So to do that, I go
POD star 1 star enter port status colon version 3.0 site ID colon cupid remote bundle port vertical bar name vertical bar password vertical bar status vertical bar mode vertical bar buffer count dash 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 plus 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 dash 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 03 vertical bar router 1 vertical bar left parent defined right parent vertical bar free vertical bar any vertical bar 004 vertical bar switch 1 vertical bar left parent defined right parent vertical bar free vertical bar any vertical bar 005 vertical bar WKS 1 vertical bar left parent defined right parent vertical bar free vertical bar any vertical bar 006 vertical bar WKS 2 vertical bar left parent defined right parent vertical bar free vertical bar any vertical bar 0 enter slash H for command menu CMS creator.
As you can see, we have 3 is the router, 4 is the switch, 5 is workstation 1, and 6 is workstation 2. Now, anybody got any questions on that so far? That is a table, and there is a lot of information in that table. You probably want to JAWS cursor, route JAWS to PC, or use your WindowEyes equivalents.
Enter slash H for command menu. Blank. Blank. 0604 vertical bar WKS 1 vertical bar left parent defined right parent vertical bar free vertical bar any vertical bar 004 vertical bar switch 1 vertical bar left parent 03 vertical bar router 1 vertical bar left dash dash plus dash 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 plus dash 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 plus dash 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 plus dash dash dash.
Okay, so see how we have that there.
PC cursor.
Now, to connect to something, we go slash C and a number. So say, for example, I want to connect to router 1, which is on port 3, I go slash C.
Slash C3, enter, connected 03, colon, router 1, to disconnect, enter, colon, caret X.
Okay, now it said connected to router 1. To disconnect, press caret X. Always pay attention to what your breakback character is, because it can be very difficult to get back if you don't remember what it is.
Enter. Router 1 greater.
See how it says router 1 greater? I am now connected to the Cisco router 1. If I decide I want to be enabled on this router, I go enable.
Enable, enter, router 1 number.
Now I want to change its host name.
Config.
Config T.
Enter configuration commands. One per line. Enter CNTL slash Z. Router 1 left parent config right parent number.
Host name.
Host name.
London.
London. Enter London left parent config right parent number.
End.
And enter London number.
See how the prompt.
4.701 colon percent size dash 5 dash config underline colon configure from console by console.
See how the prompt of the router.
Enter London number.
London number has changed to London. Now, one of the other things you have to keep in mind here is that you need to set your punctuation up for these exercises, because the dollars, the greaters, and the numbers are important. You need to be able to hear whether it says London number or London greater. I'll exit out of this router.
Exit, enter. London com 0 is now available. Press return to get started. Press return to get started.
Now, Control X breaks me back.
Disconnected. Port status colon version 3.0, site ID colon cupid remote bundle.
There's my port status.
Enter CMS greater.
Now, if I want to actually go back to this router again, slash C3.
Slash C3, enter, connected 03 colon router 1, to disconnect enter colon caret X. Enter, London greater.
I'm on London greater, which means I am a regular user using London. Now, if I want to know what commands I can use, I can press question mark.
Question, exec commands, colon, access dash enable, create a team, query, access dash list entry, access dash profile, apply user dash profile to interface, query set functions, connect, open the terminal connection, crypto encryption, related commands, disable turn off privilege commands, disconnect, disconnect an existing network connection, .11ie802.11 commands, enable.
Lots of commands there, so let's not go there. Q to bail me out of the more prompt. But say I want to see what show commands I can execute as a normal user. Show, question mark.
Show values, alarm match interface, display information about a specific alarm interface, card, app, application, firewall information, bar table, auto show automation template, backup, backup status, DCM5.
Now at the bottom of this window I've got a more prompt, which I'm
dash, dash, more, dash, dash.
Which I'm checking with insert 8. Or whatever. Spacebar will give me the next screenful. Enter will give me the next lineful.
Enter control dash plane control plane information dash dash more dash dash.
And Q will quit me out of the more stuff. This is all in your notes, but I'm going through it here because some people find it easier when they are being shown.
Q London greater show.
Now say for example I've got London greater show, so I'm going to hit control U to clear the command line.
Control U.
And I've now got London greater.
Enter London greater.
I'll hit enter again. Enable to become
the privileged exec mode.
Enable enter London number.
Now I've decided that for some reason that the configuration I just put into that router, i.e. Sorry?
Alt tab chat. Chat dialog edit. Shift tab list box. Shift tab read only edit.
You didn't do a more command on that show, but it did fit the page command anyway. How did you do that?
Brian.more:\Brian.
It does it by default. It just decides that there is more than 25 lines of output and it is going to page it for you. There is a way of setting the terminal length, but I can't remember what it is. But it actually does the whole more thing automatically. That's just built into the firmware. Which I realise is in not the same as Unix, but...
Title is chat.
Alright, so let's get back into here. Here we go.
Enter London number.
Now, say, for example, I've decided that that configuration I've just made to that router has broken it, and I don't want it. I can do a reload.
Reload, enter. System configuration has been modified. Save, left bracket, yes, slash, no, right bracket, colon.
I don't want to save the system configuration, so I say N for no.
Enter. Proceed with reload, left bracket, confirm, right
proceed
bracket.
With reload, yes.
Y, enter.
And watch, you can actually watch the router boot up. Target
3.3.0.3.777, colon, percent, size, dash, 5, dash, reload, colon, reload, requested by console, reload, reason, colon, reload, command.
Here it goes.
System bootstrap version 12.4 left parent 13 R right parent T release software left parent FC1 right parent technical support colon http://www.cisco.com/tech support copyright left parent C right parent 2006 by Cisco Systems in initializing memory for ECC period C2011 platform with 262,144 bytes of main memory is configured to 6 4-bit mode with ECC enabled upgrade RAM and initialize program load complete entry point colon 0x8000F000 size colon 0xcp80 program load complete entry point colon.
That's going to say a lot of things there, but you can do that in your own time if you want to hear what it actually says.
Blank. Program load complete entry point colon 0x8000F000 size colon 0xcp80. Program load complete entry point colon 0x8000F000 size colon 0x18A1 back selfie compressing the image colon number PC cursor number
and if you're a blind geek like me you can watch the numbers run across the bottom of the braille display.
Smart edit is enabled. Smart edit is sizing item. ID memory underlying rect type 00037 0x003DA0000C20 11 main port 0x002640 50 on board VPN 0x002C29F0 public buffer pools 0x002.
Okay, that's all very interesting. Now
this product contains cryptographic features and is subject to United States and local country laws governing import, export, transfer, and use. Delivery of Cisco cryptographic products does not press red. Earn to get started.
Okay. Press return to get started.
Enter. Star bar 23252/31.43/0/8/0/8/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0/0
7 is I am now back in router 1 greater because I have reloaded the router and I did not save the config. Can anybody tell me what is wrong with the time? It says it's 2:52 in the morning.
Running on GMP.
It certainly is. You're absolutely correct. I would actually need to set the time zone on this router to get it to show correct local time. So that's just something to be aware of. And there are commands that will allow you to do that. However, because these routers have no connection to the internet, about the best I could do would be to set up some sort of NTP server on the workstations and synchronize them to that. Now, there will be labs that have you typing commands into these routers, and sometimes you should log into these routers and type question mark. There is a thing called Ciscopedia, which is under general instructions. It's worth having. It shows you the different commands. Just for an example, though, I'll quickly whip through and configure an Ethernet interface, because this will be in one of the labs and it's all written out, but we go enable to become a super user.
Interface.
Fast.
0/0/0. Enter error. Presentable input detected. Apostrophe error. Apostrophe marker. Router 1 left parent config right parent number.
Interface.
Fast.
0/0.
0/0. Enter router 1 left parent config hash right parent number.
IP address.
Add.
192.168.1.1. 255.255.255.0.
Enter router 1 left parent config hash right parent number.
No. Shutdown.
Enter router 1 left parent config hash right parent number.
And
enter router one number, star bar 23255.0.3.079:%link-3-outcome:interface/ethernet:0/0. Change state to left, star bar 23255.0.3.511:%, size-5-config-under-line-configured from console by console. Star bar 23255.0.479:%link-proto-5-outcome:line-pro. Topol on interface path ethernet:0/0. SHA, change state to up.
See how the interface changed its state to up and the line protocol changed its state to up. If the interface comes up and the line protocol doesn't, check your cables, check your hardware. In other words, there's no link beat.
10:25 a.m.
Okay. Now, let's take that interface down because we don't need it. So we go interface.
Interface.
Oh, no, we go config T even. Silly me.
Config T. Enter configuration command.
Interface.
Interface.
FA0/0. I've just abbreviated it. What you can also do is you can actually use tab completion, so I can go INT. So I just typed INT and hit the tab, and then I put FA. And then I go 0/0, so it's completed it out for me.
0/0, enter router 1 left parent conflict dash right parent number.
And I type shutdown.
Shutdown, enter router 1 left parent conflict dash right parent number.
And end.
Enter router 1 number, star bar 23256.1%link-5-change:interface. See fast ethernet 0/0, change state to admin strat, idly down. Star bar 23256.1%link-proto-5-outcome:line-protocol on interface fast ethernet 0/0. SHA, jet state to down. Star bar 23256.1547:size-5-config-underline-configured from console by console.
Alrighty, so as you can see, the interface is administratively down, and it is also the line protocols down. And I can actually show that by going show interface.
Interface.
FA0/0.
0/0, enter. Fast Ethernet 0/0 is administratively down. Line P, protocol is down. Hardware is MV96340 Ethernet. Address is 001.62b.2460. Left parent is 001.62b.2460. Right parent. Internet address is 192.168.1.1/24. MTU 1500 bytes. DW100,000 bits by 100 USAC. RU utility 255/255. Slope 1/255. Slope 1/255. Encapsulation ARPA. Loopback not set. People accept left parent. 10 sec. Right parent. Auto dash duplex. Auto speed.
Okay, lots of stuff there.
Q, router 1 number.
But because I'm not sure how you guys are actually going to configure this, I'm just going to take that IP address off that interface. So I go config.
Config.
T.
Configuration commands. One per line.
Interface.
Interface.
FA0/0.
0/0. Enter router 1 left parent.
No. No IP address.
Address. Enter router 1 left parent. Config. Enter router 1 number.
There we go. So you go no.
25.659%size-5-config-underline-configured from console by console.
No, and a command you want to unconfigure. So that will take off the IP address from that interface. And if I go show interface.
Interface.
FA0/0.
Enter. Fast Ethernet 0/0 is administratively down. Line protocol is down. End. Hardware is MV96340 Ethernet. Address is 001.62b.2460. Left parent. E01.62b.2460. Right parent. MTU 1500 bytes. DW100,000 bits by 100 USAC. Reliability 255/255. Slope 1/255. RX slope 1/255. Encapsulation ARPA. Loopback not set. People set left parent. 10 sec. Right parent. Auto dash duplex. Auto speed. 100 ACX/FX. ARP:ARP. Time of 4:00. Last input 0130.
And the IP address is gone.
Q. Router 1 number.
Which was the whole point of that. Okay. Exit.
Exit. Enter. Router 1 com 0 is now available. Press return.
Control X to break back to our workstation, back to our serial switch.
Disconnected. Port status colon version 3.0. Side ID colon 2.
If I want to connect to one of the Linux boxes, which is a workstation, I go /C5, which is workstation 1.
/C5. Enter. Connected 05 colon WKS1. The disconnect enter colon caret X. Enter. Ubuntu 9.10 WKS1-0. WKS1 login colon.
Username Cavi.
Cavi. Enter. Password colon.
Password Cavi.
Copy, enter. Last login colon frycan 14 6 36 51 WST 2011 ISO 0. Linux WKS1 2.6.31-19-generic-day-number-56-Ubuntu-SMP2. Jan 28 2029.
Okay, it's a bit old, but it works. If I want to become the super user, sudo su.
Enter. Left bracket sudo right bracket password for copy colon.
Cavi.
Copy, enter. Root WKS1:\home/copy-number.
I am now the super user on the Linux box. Okay. So that will allow me to run, for example, ifconfig eth0. And the only reason I'm covering this is because some of these are in the module 3 and module 4 labs. And that is the configuration of the Ethernet interface. Now, there is actually the ability to, you can actually open multiple telnets to this serial switch at once, so you can actually have one open to the Linux machine, and you can open another one, I think it's up to a maximum of 4, to one of the routers, so you don't have to continuously break back. You will have to alt-tab between them, however. So we'll log out of there. The other thing we can do is we can connect
So the password for pod 1 is pod 1, the password for pod 2 is pod 2, and the password for pod 3 is pod 3. There is also a remote power manager, but I don't want to turn everybody's head to goo at the moment. That is probably enough messing around with the remote bundle. To get out, if I go /H, it'll tell me different commands.
/H, enter, command menu, colon, display, /S-port status, /S-port diagnostics, /W-port parameters, left paren, right paren, /J-side-ID, /H, command menu, left paren, help, right paren, control, let's enter, greater, enter, command mode, /X-exit, command mode, /CN, connect to port, left paren, end, colon, port number.
So if I go /X,
/X, enter, disconnected, chat dialog, read only edit.
I'm disconnected. So there you have it. Let me just flick this stuff back to where it needs to be. Does anybody have any questions before I do that? The bundle is usually available all of the time, and we would ask that if you want to play with the bundle, and I have noted your question, Brian, I'll come back to you in a second. If you would like to play with the bundle, could you please also sign into Ventrilo and put yourself into pod 1 or pod 2, or we will make a pod 3 channel, so that we know that the bundle is in use until we get our booking system in place. You don't have to say anything, you just have to lurk in one of the pods on Ventrilo. Okay, you had a question, Brian.
I did. Presumably in the labs we're going to configure interfaces and change things. Do we want to back out of all that stuff, like undo everything we did, so that the next person who goes to do the lab will encounter things in the same state as we found them?
I would like that, if at all possible. If you can do your IF configs... if you can do your IF configs on the workstation and then take them down when you're done, that would be good. Obviously, I do have backups of the workstation images, and I can actually put them back. So if something was to go wrong with one of the workstation images or whatever, I can put that back. All right, let's just go in here.
New, pause, tandem, submit, video, intercept, read, dash, initial, navigation, script, manage, frame, viewer, F, dictionary, manage, keyboard, manager, configuration, sound card, submenu, O, windows, defaults, real text, HD, audio, output, R, F.
Okay, there goes Jaws. Now... and we are back to normal. Does anybody have any questions before we finish up for today? Anything they'd like to ask about or whatever? Obviously, that's a lot to go through. This recording will be going up, and people can go back through and have a listen to it. If, for some reason, the remote bundle is down, sorry, somebody was going to key up there, email the instructors, and one of us will go in and fix it and reboot the necessary bits and pieces. There are times when that falls down. Sorry, somebody was about to key up, and I cut them off. I apologize.
Sorry, depending thing we didn't know. Can I go back to lab module exam for a second?
Yes, you can.
If we get an unsatisfactory score on one, what hoops do we have to go through to fix it?
You actually get as many attempts on the module exam as you like. However, if you are getting an unsatisfactory score and you try it a second time and you still get an unsatisfactory score, maybe it would be time for your instructor to go through it with you, if you like. And then you organise a time on Skype and you talk to us and we go through the exam with you and tell you what you got wrong, and then you get to take it again. So you simply get to take the exam again in the next activation cycle. Otherwise, I can pull down the module that you had trouble with and re-put it up, and that will give you another shot at that exam. So it's not the end of the world, and it happens to all of us.
No, and in fact, it's good that, because feedback was quite useful as far as what things I needed to be clearer on when I'm studying to do it a second time and hopefully get a better score. I want to fix module 2 because I blew it. 60 is not a good score, and I don't care if it was on the record.
We'd like you to get at least 75. And if after you've gone through your personalised feedback and you find that you are still not scoring the mark that you'd like to, then by all means organise a time to Skype me and I will happily sit down and go through all of the questions that you got wrong and tell you what the right answers were, and I'll try not to give anyone a hard time. I don't really give people a hard time, but sometimes I go, oh, this one's wrong, and we talk about the question and we find out what the answer should have been.